Happy New Year and welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Another tumultuous year in the global struggle for LGBT equality was also reflected on big and small screens during the past 12 months. We'll catch up on what's been happening in or affecting sexual minority communities around the world when NewsWrap returns next week. But now, in the second of our two traditional holiday season special programs, award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride has consummate clips and comments by their creators as he recalls some of the queer moving images that moved him most during the past year. So dim the house lights as we proudly present Pride on Screen 2006.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and welcome to a very special Pride on Screen. Sit back, relax, and butter your popcorn while we look at the best LGBT images on screens both big and small for the year 2006. It's no secret that one of last year's films had an impact that is still being felt. This year began with Gay Cowboys at the Oscars, and by its end, the word Brokeback had become a pop culture adjective. But what about the new films of 2006? How do they stack up against this?
The bottom line is, we're around each other and this thing grabs hold of us again in the wrong place, in the wrong time.
Before we get to my list of the top 10 theatrical releases, let's take a look at the increasingly important role of the small screens. According to the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, there were fewer LGBT characters on network television, but I think the quality of those gay depictions belies questions of quantity. For me, the best of the best is the character Kevin Walker on the ABC network's family drama, Brothers and Sisters. Refreshingly, he has a love life.
Oh my God, you're gay.
If you could answer the question, because these guys have lawyers that will shred you.
I'm not being prepped anymore until you admit you're gay.
Yeah. Yeah, I am a gay, so, I mean, whatever.
The ABC network also brought us the American version of Ugly Betty, with not only the flamboyant Mark St. James, played by openly gay actor Michael Urey, but Betty's nephew Justin, a character we rarely see, the gay on the way.
You guys did an awesome article last December on how to make icicles out of Mylar. I saved that issue.
Really?
Well, more for the article on that old Queen of Hungary.
I didn't know you were into history.
She used to sleep wrapped up in a sheet with raw steaks. It removed her toxins. Her skin was flawless.
Flawless?
Flawless.
This year, we also saw the last episode of the groundbreaking Will and Grace.
Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Cher. What's the story, drunken Horry?
Well, we need to do something to get Will and Grace back together. Honey, it's been almost 2 years.
But why does it always fall on us to help those two?
I know, Poodle. You know, sometimes it seems like our sole purpose in life is just to serve Will and Grace.
Right? It's like all people see when they look at us are the supporting players on the Will and Grace show.
On American cable television, Logo, the LGBT cable network, debuted the reality show Jacob and Joshua, Nemesis Rising, where gay twins from Minnesota dealt with moving to Los Angeles, coming out to their Jehovah's Witness parents, and trying to break onto the pop charts all at the same time.
We're going to acknowledge in the marketing of this project that you are a gay duo. You're comfortable with that?
I always anticipated carving a career out just like everyone else before us and dealing with those issues later.
I think we got to be realistic. I mean, it is who you are.
And Logo launched another season of Noah's Ark, a rare comedy about gay men of color.
God, Trey's been back from Africa for a month already and they're still having sex 10 times a day.
Yeah, can't they make do with 5 times a day like normal people?
People are still having sex? When do they find the time?
And I have to give props to the gay on-demand network Here TV, with its signature original show, the spooky and sexy Dante's Cove, which begs the question, will we watch bad actors if they're really, really pretty and shirtless? Are we that shallow?
You don't abandon the people that you love, Van, no matter how much it hurts. Tell her the truth about the magic, the amnesia spell, everything. If she hates you for it, she hates you. That's the risk you take.
God, I love that show. Here TV also continued their commitment to low-budget, guilty pleasure genre films. They turned out Shock to the System, another film in the Donald Strachey mystery series, starring Chad Allen as a gay detective, and brought us a slew of horror, sci-fi, and action-adventure films. In Deadly Skies, a gay, discredited former Air Force colonel, played by Antonio Sabato Jr., must destroy an asteroid before it hits the Earth.
A military hero must choose.
I really need to speak to you.
Between a new beginning.
I was done living lies.
They didn't ask, and you certainly didn't have to tell them.
And their only hope.
In Hellbent, a serial killer threatens revelers attending the gay Halloween parties in West Hollywood.
Damn!
Oh, man. Double Daddy's got some serious package.
Damn, what's he doing?
Oh, man, he's living it out.
Yeah, show us, Big Daddy. Come on.
Here it comes, here it comes!
What's he got there?
That's a knife.
In Her Line of Fire was an action-adventure film starring Muriel Hemingway as a lesbian Secret Service agent who must save the Vice President when his plane goes down.
When the Vice President is on a phone call with the White House Chief of Staff, don't put a camera in his face. Got it?
Got it. But, I find it interesting that you don't get on Kendall's or Murphy's ass. What is it about mine you find so attractive?
Perhaps the biggest development in 2006 was the increased accessibility of shows via streaming content on the internet. This meant for the first time, regardless of geography, you could see Ugly Betty on ABC.com or Noah's Ark on Logo.com. The gay-focused OutZoneTV.com launched with offerings that ranged from reruns of the 2004 Bravo series Manhunt, The Search for America's Most Gorgeous Male Model, to the groundbreaking 1972 TV movie That Certain Summer, plus online pay services such as iTunes, and that keeping up with the gay or lesbian characters on MTV's The Real World or drooling over Tim Gunn on Project Runway is only a couple dollars and mouse clicks away.
And basically make it work.
Yes.
Diana, this is make it work time for you.
Wow.
You have to make this work. This is the classic make it work time. All right?
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to a very special Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Now it's time to look at the 10 best LGBT films of 2006. With more gay and lesbian characters finding inclusion in films that are not about their particular sexuality, defining queer cinema these days is difficult. Sure, something like another gay movie in which randy gay boys compete to lose their anal virginity is still easy to label gay movie, especially since the title is another gay movie. But is Steve Carell's brilliant gay turn in Little Miss Sunshine less important because it was an ensemble film? I think the answer to the question, what is a gay film, can be found by asking, who's the intended audience? That said, I should point out that number 10 on my list doesn't have a single major character that is gay or lesbian.
You already supply AZT to your employees.
What else could I do?
Well, you could extend your charity to the community through the mission.
Isn't a charity plan? A quarter of my payroll carries the virus. Soon it's going to be hard.
What about their families?
Financing the survival of Africa. Bankrupt me in a day.
Three Needles is a trilogy of stories that relate to each other only through the circumstance of a worldwide plague. In South Africa, a nun makes a personal sacrifice for the benefit of an impoverished village. In rural China, a black market operative posing as a government bloodmobile worker jeopardizes an entire town. And in Montreal, an HIV-positive porn actor schemes to pass his mandatory blood test. It has an all-star cast that includes Stockard Channing, Olympia Dukakis, Lucy Liu, Sandra Oh, Chloe Sevigny, and Sean Ashmore. And it was written and directed by out-gay Canadian filmmaker Tom Fitzgerald, best known for The Hanging Garden, Beefcake, and The Event. One surprise in Three Needles is that it focuses primarily on heterosexual characters.
In the big picture of AIDS, gay men make up a tiny fraction of people with AIDS. There is no one face of AIDS. From culture to culture, from Africa to Asia to North America, it's unrecognizable. I think that must be part of the reason why we don't come together to fight it. It's a different monster in every village.
In Tom Fitzgerald's last film, The Event, the monster was in a very different village. That film was about AIDS and the gay community in New York's fashionable Chelsea district.
I felt when I was making the event that I was not making a gay film. I felt like this was a story I was making for my mom and for all the other moms out there in New Jersey. Gay people knew that story inside out and backwards. This was not going to be something enlightening to us. So with Three Needles, though, I think it's actually a film that gay people do respond to particularly.
Number 9 on my list is also a film that's about more than just the gay experience. Red Doors is a hilarious and revealing film about an Asian family living in the U.S. and dealing with the colliding worlds of their traditional heritage and their current reality, the choices they must make as individuals, as members of a family, and as Asian Americans are sometimes humorous and sometimes heartbreaking.
I'm Georgia Lee, and I'm the writer-director of Red Doors. Red Doors is a film about a dysfunctional Chinese-American family in New York. It's based on three daughters and the relationship with their parents. And for me, I feel like the film is mostly about a coming of age of the family. It's an ensemble cast and how kids and parents grow apart emotionally and physically as everybody grows older.
And for LGBT audiences, there's Julie, the shy middle sister, a fourth-year medical student whose only social outlet is her weekly ballroom dance class. Julie has always been the quiet center of the Wong family's storm. However, her world is turned upside down when she meets Mia Scarlett, a movie star researching her next role at the hospital.
What can I get you?
2 Valencias, please.
What's in that?
You coat the inside of a martini glass with Fino sherry, flame a few orange peels, use chilled gin, and strain.
You bartend?
Sometimes.
Then why don't you try it?
I've never had a Valencia. It was invented in the 1930s by a bartender at Chasen's in Beverly Hills. It's also called the Flame of Love. Because Frank Sinatra had one and fell in love. And then he threw a party at Chasen's and ordered 200 of them. It's a lot of love.
And it's a lot of oranges.
You know, I couldn't peel an orange or a corn apple until I was in college. My mother always washed and cut everything for us with these little toothpicks. The first time I tried to peel a potato, I almost lost half my finger. Well, now you slice and dice people with the best of them. Well, after carving a watermelon, heart transplants are nothing. You're Valencia, doctor.
Film number 8, Strangers with Candy, features out gay author David Sedaris' kid sister Amy as a bisexual adult going back to high school after a few years in prison.
Jerry Blank started developing, I was with my brother David Sedaris, my brother Sedaris, and we met this woman, her name was Jean, and I got the Jerry voice by imitating David imitating her. And so once I had the voice, the face came along.
Principal Blackman is busy. Have a seat.
What's shaking, Red? Carpet match the drapes? I'm Jerry. Jerry Blank. What are you in for? Boost some goodies? You can tell Mama.
I didn't make my school fundraising quota. They're probably going to call my parents.
Oh, it's no big deal. Tell you what. Usually I look out for numero me, but I like you. You're sweet. So I just might be willing to take you under my spicy buffalo wing. But a job? I'll never slap you around unless, of course, you get out of line.
Also in the film, her closeted married science teacher, Chuck Noblet, played by Stephen Colbert, is having an affair with her art teacher, Joffrey Jellyneck, played by the film's director, Paul Dinello, who's cute enough to be a new gay icon.
Ha ha, gay.
Emma, I didn't know. I'm flattered. That relationship is just a heightened version of our actual relationship, you know, much to his wife's chagrin.
Look, Joffrey, I'm glad you stopped by. I'd like you to leave.
Sorry, what's happening?
It's over.
What are you saying, Chuck?
I need more out of this relationship than I'm willing to put in. I think I deserve better, don't you?
Film number 7 was produced on a micro budget, but is incredibly moving. Its star, Michael Urie, who also plays gay on the American version of Ugly Betty, shows an unexpected range in this heartbreaking film. WTC View.
Hey, it's me. Leave a message.
Hello. I'm ringing about the advert in this week's Village Voice. I know it's a dreadful time, but if you could give me a ring, I'd be quite grateful. I'm at the St. Regis Hotel.
Hello there, this is Connor. I'm interested in checking out the apartment share you listed online.
In the wake of 9/11 theme movies, like Paul Greengrass's Real Time, United 93, and Oliver Stone's heavy-handed World Trade Center, writer-director Brian Sloan's WTC View is a refreshing, stripped-down take on the after-effects of the tragedy without the special effects. Based on his astonishing play, Brian's film is about a young gay man who places an ad on September 10th looking for a new roommate to share his two-bedroom apartment. Not only is it in Soho, it has a great view of the Twin Towers.
I'm Brian Sloan, filmmaker and writer.
Basically was inspired by a very true life situation. On September 10th, right before I went to bed that night, I'd put an ad online on the Village Voice website for a roommate. And then the next day, you know, September 11th, I left the apartment. I stayed with my boyfriend out in Brooklyn. And a couple days later, I called my answering machine, and it was the strangest mix of these frantic messages of my friends wondering where I was, mixed in with people saying, oh, hi, I'd like to come see your apartment on September 12th.
So you don't have an apartment right now?
My place was down in Battery Park City.
Oh.
I shouldn't say was, and it's still there. They just won't let us in yet. Said all the units are covered in dust. Layer of toxic crap on everything.
Were you there when it happened?
No, thank God. Would have freaked out. I mean, not that I didn't freak out.
If you saw last year's film Capote, you know the basic story of my number six pick, Infamous. But this film is very different in tone, and this time out, Truman Capote is even a bit gayer.
What I love about our story,
the writer and director of Infamous, Douglas McGrath,
is that it starts as a light comedy and ends as something very dark, with him in a very, very different place. And essentially, the bulk of the movie covers a period of about 6 to 8 months. And yet, I think it tells both the triumph and the tragedy of his life in that period.
Detective Willis.
Jimmy.
Yeah, will you confirm that there is more than one killer?
I will not.
Well, of course there was more than one, unless the killer was a hypnotist.
Beg your pardon, ma'am?
It's illogical to suppose there's only one killer. The Clutters were tied up. To tie them up, he'd have to put his gun down. Once he put the gun down, the Clutters would run for the hills.
I don't believe I know who you are. Or what?
I'm from out of town.
What's your paper?
Ladies' Home Journal.
Oh, I'm not a reporter. I'm a writer.
My pick for number five didn't have a very wide release. It's from the Philippines, is in a combination of English, Filipino, and Tagalog. The English title is The Blossoming of Maximo Oliveros.
I'm Aureo Sulito.
And you're the director of?
The Blossoming of Maximo Oliveros, or Ang Pagdadalaga ni Maximo Oliveros. The movie's about a young gay boy who comes from a family of thieves, and they live in the slums, and eventually he falls in love with the policeman. And this causes the ire of his family, and the conflict starts from there. Well, actually, the setting of the film is my street. It's where I grew up in. So it's my barrio, and actually I still live there. In fact, the house of the policeman is my house. So we have a nice house amidst the slums. It's always like that in the Philippines, an example of extremes.
At number four, the History Boys made school a lot of fun.
In the timetable, our esteemed headmaster has given these periods the dubious title of General Studies. I will let you into a little secret, boys. There is no such thing as General Studies. General Studies is a waste of time. Knowledge is not general, it is specific.
Taking place in a British high school, or grammar school as it's called in the UK, The History Boys tells the story of a group of eight boys prepping for their university entrance exam in the early 1980s. While an ensemble piece, at its core, it's the story of young, gay, and Jewish Posner, Plastud Denken, with whom Posner is not so secretly in love, and two very different teachers. There's Hector, the ancient yet charismatic general studies teacher, who they idolize even though he gropes their crotches when he gives them rides on his motorcycle. And there's Irwin, a young gay teacher hired to show the boys techniques that will grab the examiner's attention. One of the most striking things about the History Boys is the casual acceptance of sexuality by the students and the faculty. Out gay director Nicholas Hintner explains.
Yeah, I have to say that was my experience, and it might have been exceptional. I was at school in the 70s. And I think that was because the pressure was to be cool. The pressure was not to be bigoted.
This is Gavin Newsom, mayor of San Francisco, the most diverse and welcoming city in the world, and you're listening to Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Number 3 is yet another breathtaking work from the handsome and brilliant François Ozon. In the U.S., it was called Time to Leave.
Hello, this is François Ozon, writer and director of Le Temps qui reste, A Time to Leave.
I think the idea of the film comes from my own experience. I was waiting for medical test, and like everybody, I was very afraid of the results. And during all the time, I was waiting for them because I have a lot of imagination. I imagined the worst situation, and I began to make different scenarios in my mind. And when the results arrived, it was okay, but I had still the idea in mind. So I tried to project myself in a film in which I could learn that I'm going to die very early and to imagine what could be the reaction of such a character. It's like this that it began. I didn't want to make a film about disease. For me, it was important to have the confrontation of a man in front of his own death. So at the beginning, you have a big scene with the doctor at the hospital, but after you don't care of the disease and all the medical things. I wanted to be focused on the journey of a character in front of his death and how he will try to accept, to reconciliate with himself and to cope with his own death. It was the challenge of the film. I think it was important that he could be gay because I think for a gay character, the idea of the posterity is more important because usually you don't have child, so after your death, there is nothing. And I think because he's gay, it's more painful in a certain way. And there is a twist in the film. He's able to make a baby. I don't tell how, but I thought it was more touching. And it was a way to lose this kind of cliché to say when you're gay, you die with AIDS. You know, you can be gay and die with another disease.
I went back and forth over the number 2 pick. For me, it could have easily been number 1. And talking to this filmmaker was the highlight of my year. The film is the controversial and brilliant Short Bus.
I'm the mistress of Short Bus. It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. Hi-ya! This is where it all happens. Aren't they beautiful? It's just like the 60s.
Only with less hope.
Oh, for a minute, I thought that man didn't have an arm.
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, the writer and director and producer of Short Bus. My last film was Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
John, what is Short Bus about?
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone. It's about a group of young people in their 30s in New York, post 9/11, definitely exhausted by Bush, in this strange time where it seems harder to connect, where life seems a bit more powerless than ever before, even though we're supposed to be the most powerful country in the world. It's like this strange numbness that a lot of people feel here and trying to reach out and connect with themselves and with others. The idea of using real sex in a film that was emotional and humorous and a real New York story came when I was doing Hedwig and was watching a lot of films out of Europe. I mean, there's dozens of films just this year that have been using real sex and coming from foreign countries mostly. I had seen a lot of these films, and I thought it was very fascinating to use that language of sex that we all know a few words of. But most of them were very grim and bleak, and I thought, well, there's more there than just bleakness, and there's more there than just titillation. You know, porn certainly has its place, but I think actually most porn is as formulaic as Hollywood. So I wanted to de-eroticize the sex and see what was left over, like panning for gold. What is left is emotion, ideas, humor, all kinds of revealing things about our lives when you can sort of get the titillation out of the way.
My pick for the number one example of Pride on Screen in 2006 is from filmmaking partners who are real-life partners. Their film, Quinceanera, is about what happens when teenage sexuality, age-old rituals, and real estate prices collide.
Hello, I'm Wash Westmoreland.
And I am Richard Glatzer. We are the writer-directors of Quinceanera.
We moved to Echo Park in 2001 and felt much more at home there than we had in the Melrose area where we were living previously, and got to know our neighbors very quickly and were asked to be the official photographers at our next-door neighbor's quinceañera, which was our first real experience of that event. And just over time, we'd seen the neighborhood changing. We'd seen it gentrifying. And one day, it was January 1st, 2005, it just occurred to us, sitting around hungover, talking about ideas for movies we had, what an interesting kind of soup our block is. And just, you know, multi-ethnic, multicultural, different races, different sexuality, different generations, that it was such kind of ripe material, people right next door to each other and yet not knowing about each other's worlds.
Carlos, played by newcomer Jesse Garcia, is a gay character we've not seen in film before. A proud Latino, muscular and tattooed, outwardly a tough cholo, Carlos is also very comfortable with his sexuality. When he has a three-way with his white gay landlords, it blurs the lines of who's seducing who. But issues of class, race, and power arise when Carlos has a separate affair with one of the two landlords.
Like this?
No, it's like this. This one's an E. This one's a P. Eco parque.
Eco parque.
Be careful you don't flash everyone on Temple Street, though.
They're the rival gang, right?
They kill you.
Wow. You really live in a whole nother world, don't you?
Nah, you do.
Well, that's all the time we have. To recap, the bottom line is that 2006, in many ways, could not get out of the shadow of 2005. But there were many great films. Honorable mentions go to A Love to Hide, another gay movie, The Gymnast, and Little Miss Sunshine. The very best festival films this year were Boy Culture and Colma the Musical, both of which we'll see in theaters in 2007. My top 10 for 2006 were Three Needles, Red Doors, Strangers with Candy, WTC View, Infamous, The Blossoming of Máximo Olveros, The History Boys, Time to Leave, Short Bus, and Quinceanera. For more info on queer cinema, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2006, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners. We thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We literally can't go on without you, and you can choose from some special CD thank you gifts too, including this program. You can also bid on some terrific items at the Stonewall Society-sponsored online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for our area at alternabid.com. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We wish you and yours all the best in 2007, and we thank you for listening on WWUH West Hartford, Connecticut, 5RRR Woomera, South Australia, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Resolve to stay tuned.